IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I'm your host, Shri Krishna Upadhyaya. We are doing a two-part series on digitalization of healthcare in India on All Things Policy. Today's first episode is going to be about the transformative potential of digitalization of healthcare. And we will be focusing on the Ayushman Bharat Digital Mission, or the ABDM, launched by the Union Government in September 2021. We will look at the different digital health initiatives that have been launched under the ABDM mission and see how these can lead to a more accessible, efficient, and equitable healthcare system in the country. In a later episode, we'll discuss something called the Unified Healthcare Interface, or UHI, which is also being built as part of the ABDM and is going to be the digital public infrastructure for healthcare in India. So joining me today on All Things Policy are two guests. So first off, let me introduce to you Surbhi Arun, Associate Director of International Innovation Core, a University of Chicago's Social Impact Fellowship that operates in India and the US. Welcome to All Things Policy, Surbhi.
Thank you, Sri. Thank you so much.
And I also have with me Riya Singh, who is part of the IIC as well, and is currently the project lead of Ayushman Bharat Digital Mission at the National Health Authority. Welcome, Riya. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Great. So, you know, before we discuss ABDM, I thought we can just thought about the healthcare problem in the country, right? And when I look at the issue broadly, after zooming out, I identify certain problems, which are poor public health expenditure in the country, shortage of doctors and medical staff, burgeoning population that needs quality healthcare, increasing health costs, and also low insurance coverage, right? So in this picture that I've painted, where does digitalization of healthcare come in? And how is it going to be solving India's healthcare problems?
Thank you for that, Sri. I think we have to understand that digital per se is not new to the healthcare space. There was a lot of digital innovation in the healthcare for the longest time. What we're talking about is a digital ecosystem, which has been the trend across all these sectors. Healthcare is, of course, much later in its journey for adopting an overall ecosystem that enables transaction. Now, we obviously understand that there are challenges the way you're sharing, but digital can't necessarily solve for it. What it's meant to do is enable unlocking some of these challenges. So by digital, we can't really increase professional resources suddenly, right? But what you can do is you can leverage the capacity of the existing forces to give some more access to healthcare services. And that's what we're trying to do. While there is a longer journey towards providing universal health coverage and improving the quality of our services, digital here is just a means in the journey for us.
Right. So, Surbhi, what you're saying essentially is tech, much like in every other sector, is going to be an accelerator when it comes to healthcare as well in the country, right? But typically, you know, at least in my mind, when you speak of digital healthcare, my mind immediately jumps to teleconsultations, right? And that's because we often say that, okay, you have shortage of doctors in rural areas, people who or doctors don't like going there to offer their services and so on. But thanks to, you know, 4G, 5G technology or mobile apps and so on, we can actually bridge that gap, right? While doctors sit in urban areas and give consultations to people spread across the country. So when you talk about digitalization as a concept, is it just about that? Is it just about, you know, bridging this urban-rural gap, or, you know, making sure healthcare services are available at the grassroots? Or is it something more comprehensive? Is it about, like, you know, it is also equally applicable to you and me, for instance? So is that how it is conceptualized?
The digital ecosystem is inclusive for everyone. Because what it's meant to do is, just like you and I in the urban spaces and people in rural spaces, require quality services, require better access to healthcare and healthcare facilities. So digital in that sense is comprehensive and not, and like you rightly said, there are some aspects of teleconsultation that we immediately think about. But this imagination for digital health is much broader, much more holistic, which should mean that the person moving from rural space to urban spaces as well should have access to the information of their historical treatments, right? And it is not only meant for the geography you are restricted to. This is also focusing on the larger mandate the government has to ensure that everyone is given access to healthcare, everyone's given quality healthcare, and that you're also meeting your SDG targets.
Right. So thanks for this background picture. And I would like to move to, you know, Ayushman Bharat's digital mission and try to unpack what that holds for digitalization as such. The first, of course, what I think most people would be familiar with is Ayushman Bharat health cards, which is essentially a 5 lakh insurance coverage, which the union government is providing to certain sections of the population. But I believe the Ayushman Bharat's digital mission is a much larger policy push by the government. Of course, it was launched somewhere in September 2021. But even before we come to what it entails and what are the elements of ABDM and so on, maybe Riya, could you tell us, you know, what is the thinking behind it? Because I remember reading and hearing about National Health Stack during the days when everyone was caught up with Aadhaar and India Stack and so on. This was, you know, even before the pandemic hit us. So what was the policy thinking up till 2021 that actually resulted in the ABDM? So if you could shed some light on that.
No, yeah, thanks for calling out PMJ. I think that's been a scheme that's been around a lot longer and is widely known. And actually, a lot of folks end up, confusing the two schemes and thinking ABDM is part of that scheme itself. So I just also want to specifically call out for the audience that the Ayushman Bharat Digital Mission is actually a separate scheme. The PMJ scheme, ABDM, and two other schemes actually sit under the larger Ayushman Bharat umbrella of various schemes that are focused in, you know, kind of improving healthcare and towards the universal health coverage objective. But ABDM is actually a separate scheme that is more focused on building the infrastructure for digitizing healthcare in the country.
So just to give a context of where ABDM, kind of Ayushman Bharat Digital Mission, came into the picture, and just to kind of chronicle the journey so far, it's actually been a few years in the making. So while it was launched in 2021, there's a lot of background work that happened. And over the years, you know, it's been a very consultative, collaborative process with many different ecosystem stakeholders who've weighed in, contributed at different stages of this policy formulation at the beginning. This included industry experts, healthcare and tech experts, market players, to be able to comprehensively define a roadmap ahead. So actually, some of the thinking started, in 2016, and in about 2017, we actually had the first document that came out, which was a national health policy by the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, which extensively advocated for deployment of digital tools for improving the efficiency and outcome of the healthcare ecosystem. And this was very much in line with India's commitment to the SDG 3 specifically, you know, which focuses on health and well-being. Post which, in 2018, Niti Aayog actually came up with the National Health Stack, which set out the vision for a digital stack for health and outlined the key objectives and the principles that this stack could, achieve. Eventually, in 2019, we had a very comprehensive document that came out, which is a National Digital Health Blueprint, which again was aligned with the National Health Policy of 2017 and the Health Stack Vision document as well, which put down the framework of actually building this digital mission, to so to speak of, where the architectural vision, the implementation guidance, the framework, along with the infrastructure, the building blocks, and the regulations that will be required to execute a mission of such scale. And eventually in 2020, we also had more documents that came out from Niti Aayog and the Ministry and National Health Authority as well, who contributed very closely in a lot of these documents. All of this led to eventually the National Digital Health Mission being launched in a pilot phase in the year of 2020 in 6 UTs in the country. And then, as we know it, in 2021, it was eventually launched nationwide. So just to kind of summarize, you know, there's been a lot of work that's happened and a lot of research, documentation, a lot of thinking that's gone behind to ABDM as it stands today in its design and implementation.
Right. And I just wanted to know, what was the impact of the pandemic in this entire process, right? Because as we know, especially during the second wave, which was summer of 2021, the Indian healthcare system sort of stood exposed, or rather the shortcomings were out in the fore for everybody to witness. And that was a pressing time. And then a few months later, we had the ABDM, right? So was this a journey somehow like yours, or did the pandemic rather not jumpstart, but gave a heavy push for it to be, you know, pushed out? Or did it in any way affect or sort of like change the thinking behind how we should help approach digital healthcare in the country?
Right. Actually, pandemic did accelerate some of the work that was already happening. But I think what it did more so was it kind of reinstated the belief in the framework that was already put down earlier. So, and I'll give you an example, right? One of the things everyone struggled with was finding the right drug at the right time. Is there a critical care unit available? Where are beds available, right? These were things that everyone was kind of frantically looking for over WhatsApp groups, informally in your networks, in your circles. But there was no one platform where you could get that answer. And as you kind of tie that back to ABDM, that are actually building blocks that facilitate for just such use cases, right? And we'll probably talk about this in the future, but solving for such problems of discovery of beds, discovery of doctors, in good time with fair price discoverability, being able to avail services from verified healthcare professionals and verified health facilities, right? These are all things that are actually addressed by the ABDM framework. So if anything, it actually kind of pushed it and not saying we're going in the right direction.
Right. So it's sort of like validated the government's thinking till up till that point, you know. Let's just talk about the building blocks, like you put it, right? Simple question, what are these building blocks of ABDM? You said it's not only about teleconsultation, you said it's not only about insurance, but there is a lot more going on. So what is it? What are these building blocks? How would you place them within the larger objectives of the mission?
So to take a step back of what ABDM is and what the objective is. So ABDM essentially is built with the objective to is designed with the objective to build the digital infrastructure required to build an open digital health ecosystem. And there are different components as part of this entire stack and what it addresses. To get into it, there are four broad buckets, if I were to put it in that. One is the identity layer itself. So this is providing identity, verifiable identity actually, to different stakeholders in the ecosystem. So this is an identity for every citizen who wants to access healthcare, every healthcare provider who wants to provide healthcare, every facility which is part of the healthcare ecosystem, and even an identification for drugs in the country. And the idea is to provide a single source of truth for all of these actors that I spoke of, and these are essentially designed as central repositories that are built and hosted by the National Health Authority to essentially build more trust in the ecosystem itself of the various actors that participate in it. And a lot of these identities are actually built using some of the existing digital public goods that are already present. So they're built using things like Aadhaar, e-sign, consent artifact. A lot of these things are all already contributing to this design. On top of that, there are three gateways that are also built, and they enable interoperability of various aspects. So one particular gateway called the Health Information Exchange Consent Manager, that gateway is specifically built to drive interoperability, drive exchange of health data across various actors in the ecosystem. And the idea with this is to actually unlock the value of health of data that currently sits today in a very siloed format. So what that means is, typically if you go to a facility, go to a doctor to avail any healthcare, there's some data that's generated, and typically that's stored in two ways, right? One is either it is stored at the facility itself in whatever software that they're using. And second is you may get a physical format of a physical copy of it that you go back home, keep it locked up, which is probably collecting dust over time. And then when you actually need it, you're unable to look for it, or you're not able to build on top of that in the long term, right? So you lose that somewhere in your journey. So the idea is to actually, how can data sitting in different places actually then be tied back to a citizen through using their Aadhaar which is the Ayushman Bharat health account that citizen identifier that I spoke of earlier, and essentially contribute to building their longitudinal health history. So whatever you go, whatever your data is generated with your consent, it should be linked back to your ABHA number, your ABHA. And if you choose to share that, if you'd want to share that between two facilities, say in terms of if you're trying to get a second opinion, you've just been prescribed a test and you want to share back your reports with the doctor. So between any two facilities, you want to enable exchange of that data with your consent, that can happen through this gateway. The second gateway is about the Unified Health Interface. This is specifically about enabling an interoperability in digital health services. It is an open network based on open specifications to allow for use cases such as, discovering doctors across platforms, booking any kind of consultation, booking an ambulance, purchasing a drug across different platforms. So it's what essentially does enables is around different applications, both from a user standpoint, so that could be any of your personal health record applications, or any application from a provider side, so to be able to speak to one another. And the third is the NHCX, which is the National Health Claims Exchange. This specific gateway is essentially to standardize the claims processing between any facility and a payer. And the idea is that over time, right, when all of this kind of comes together, this identity layer, these different gateways that I spoke of, they provide a more different market players come and integrate with them, and they leverage these digital public goods, and then they take that back to the users that are using these platforms, and essentially provide a more holistic and more comprehensive healthcare experience to the citizen. So if you notice in these three gateways that I spoke of, it is right about discovering a service, availing that service through the UHI gateway, then B, exchanging health data, managing your health data better through the HICM gateway, and then essentially when the payment bits comes in, when your insurance comes in through the NHCX gateway. So essentially it covers the entire value chain for the user to speak of. And I also just want to end this, that this entire design is grounded in a lot of very key design and tech principles, right? Both from a policy as well as an architectural standpoint. So one of that could be, all of this is based on federated architecture. So barring the registries, everything is all data that's generated, it's stored where it's generated and cannot be exchanged without any consent of the user itself. This privacy by design, it's currently voluntary in nature. So a lot of this policy thinking and the has gone behind into the entire designing of this architecture itself.
The intention of all of this is to become a single source of truth in the country for identification for these four layers that I spoke of, four entities that I spoke of. And the idea is that these building blocks can actually be leveraged then to build on top of use cases that are going to be beneficial for different ecosystem, different stakeholders in the ecosystem. This is just the identity layer, and there's a lot more that's already built on top of it by the National Health Authority. There are gateways that are built that are specifically focused on allowing interoperability of health services, allowing interoperability of health data, and even standardizing the claims process between a facility and a payer. So this essentially, in a nutshell, is kind of comprised of the stack that we speak of. And now we're seeing the market participants come in, integrate their systems, and then actually build on top of these building blocks and design more use cases that are going to be relevant.
And so you rightly mentioned that, there's a lot of tech that goes behind the scenes, right? But how does this look like for a user? So, and you said, of course, players, innovators are going to come and build on top of this, right? And of course, I'm sure something similar can be done with, say, or rather compared with how the UPI ecosystem works, right? Because a lot is happening at the payments level, which you and I as users need not be aware of. But I have an app on my phone, say a PhonePe or a Paytm, through which I can access these services, right? So similarly, if you would sort of draw the picture as to how this will work, how will this look like for a patient in a hospital?
I think it's very similar. I do want to preface that ABDM currently is voluntary in nature, and this is both from a citizen perspective as well as a provider perspective. Whoever wants to participate can choose to opt in, and at some point, if you choose that you do not want to participate in this ecosystem, you have the choice to opt out as well. So for someone who wants to engage in this ecosystem, there is an entry level, which is to come and create something called an ABHA address for yourself. It's very similar to a UPI address that you may have. You need not remember it. You know it's on your application and then you use that to transact, right? Which is then again linked to your bank and so on and so forth, right? A very similar construct here as well. And for a citizen to create an ABHA address for themselves, it's as simple as walking into a facility that has that is using a software or a digital solution that is integrated with ABDM and can create that ABHA for them, ABHA address for them. The second is also through a self mode that you can download any personal health record application which has integrated again with ABDM and can give you that functionality. Or thirdly, is as simple as going to the ABDM, going to the ABHA website, creating that for yourself as well. So there are various ways and touch points how a user can do this. And I also want to add in that there are also cases for how it can be made available for folks who may not be as technologically savvy. So there are other mechanisms to also do this. But essentially, there's that entry point that has to be created. I think once that is done, a lot of it then is in the backend, right? The solution that's operating in the backend is what has to be integrated, and the patient essentially just gets a far more nuanced and more sophisticated user experience where you're just getting a notification saying, hey, think you have a healthcare record that has been generated in facility X. Would you want to link that to your ABHA address so that you can see it on your health locker or your PHR application? Right. Hey, you've gone to a facility. Do you want to scan and share your demographic details so you save out on time as you stand in the queue for so you can avoid standing in the queue for a registration process? So there are you have a PHR application. You can actually today download any application and discover doctors who are operating across multiple platforms on a single application that you're using. So from a user standpoint, essentially enhancing their user experience in the application that they may currently use, or perhaps if they're newer to the ecosystem, any PHR application they choose to download tomorrow and start using.
Right. So you said it began in 2021, and I'm sure the work is progressing because I want to know from you, what is the progress like? And in ABDM itself, you know, getting all these people on board and increasing adaptability as well. So what are the challenges that you foresee? What is the timeline here? How quickly do you think, this is going to be as popular like UPI, if not more? So what does that picture look like to you?
I mean, look, I know there's a UPI comparison that comes up very often, and ABDM may not have had its UPI moment yet, but I think it's on the way. And look, I think even UPI, something like a UPI took many years in the works before it actually saw that that kind of traction. But that apart, we are about 2.5 years into the rollout. And from a 2.5 2.5 timeline standpoint, we've seen a fair bit of adoption that has happened. And there's actually a dashboard that's available. Anybody who wants to go see what the adoption metrics are, what the numbers are, who are the folks who are participating, they can actually, it's available to everybody. They can go check that out for themselves. We've seen a lot of leading health tech players come and integrate. We've had about close to 200 ecosystem participants who've come and integrated their solutions with ABDM. And this is a mix of your HMIS, which is your hospital information management systems, your lab information management systems, your personal health record applications, government healthcare programs as well, both at a state, at a central level, and other digital health solution entities as well. So we've seen a lot of diverse participation. So everyone's kind of coming in, registering themselves on this sandbox that ABDM, that NHS is providing them with to come test these APIs, test the solutions, and then take that out to market and test it with their audience and roll it out to their audience. We've seen about 50 crore plus Indians today have an ABHA number, 2.5 lakh healthcare professionals. And this is a mix of both modern as well as traditional medicine who have a healthcare professional ID, which is an identification number for healthcare professionals. And we've also had about 2.5 lakh facilities also register, health facility registry, which is a ID for facilities in the country. And again, a mix of government as well as private facilities. So there's a fair bit of adoption. But of course, I think a long way to go before we actually activate and really the ecosystem is fully built and is thriving. Speaking of roadblocks, I think one thing very important to understand is that for any entity to come in, really value and benefit from the ecosystem, you need the solution companies to really make that first move and get integrated. it's like in UPI, as if banks didn't agree to become a part of it, I don't think we'd see the benefits that we do today. So getting that value proposition of getting these digital solutions to come and integrate and provide a very good user experience on the front end to the doctors or the facilities wherever they're deployed, I think that's very critical. And that continues to be a place where there's a lot of efforts going on, I think, both at a central and at a state level, as well as in the private space as well. So that, I think, is going to be a key lever to activate in the next couple of years to get more and more of these digital solutions companies to come see value and really integrate the solutions with EPDM. And in the years that follow, will just be about getting more users on board to their solutions.
Right. Thanks for that, Riyas.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
So now I sort of want to take the discussion towards the National Health Authority, which is the nodal body, which is steering this whole process behind ABDM, right? What is NHA in the sense, like, is it a regulatory body? Is it a government autonomous body? Does it work with the health ministry? So what is the sort of status of it? And who is executing this? Who is behind this in the sense, is it a collaborative body between industry and the government, between, you know, volunteers like iSpirit in the case of Aadhaar was, and so on? And secondly, what are the functions that it has assumed? Is it going to be looking after the whole digital infrastructure being built by ABDM in the sense, like, is it going to be an NPCI like body or what? So, you can come in here and tell us, you know, what is the overall structure of NHA and the functions that is going to be performing?
So NHA came as an offshoot of the ministry. It's within the ministry. It comes under the Ministry of Health, but it was given charge when PMJ was designed and implemented back in 2018. Only to help, because there was a digital component for it and there was an insurance component to it. So an agency that could just look into designing aspects of it. When ABDM got launched, they just felt it was natural that NHA, since they're already looking into the PMJ architecture, takes over the design and adoption for ABDM. So currently, NHA operates as an entity, independent entity with a CEO that's leading it, but it is affiliated to the ministry. So additionally, the focus for the government is not to build the entire stack, right? The focus for the government is to build only the critical components for it. So there were a lot of ecosystem players who came in to help build the blueprint for ABDM. There were many, many think tanks, civil society organization representations, the private sector representations who were helping NHA build this architecture. And as of today, NHA is building the stack, so the foundational layer that Riya mentioned about, because they're also critical elements, because these are verifiers, identifiers. So NHA currently is just facilitating, but a lot of the build over the foundational layers is left for open ecosystem to come in. And that's where the role of private players becomes very, very important from a solutioning point of view. But like you mentioned, there are ecosystem partners who have been associated with NHA, continue to be associated with NHA. And the whole DPI ecosystem is being built around same principles. So we had the role for NHA. NHA is not a regulatory body. It is a nodal agency that's leading the efforts, bringing partners in. But at some point of time, there would be some agency that would take up the regulatory aspect of it. Currently, NHA is looking into both.
Right. And in the future, do you think, I'm asking you to speculate here, do you think it will have to assume a different role? Because, even let's look at the Aadhaar example again. I'm sorry, I have to keep going back to these other similar frameworks. But you had the UIAI, which was set up as an executive body, and later on it got statutory powers and so on. Do you foresee a need for that, first of all? And second, do you foresee something similar happening once this ecosystem is up and thriving?
I think it will be a natural progression for how the program moves. There was a role that NHA had to play considering the disaggregated nature of healthcare. And like Riya said, this is not only for modern medicine, which is a little more organized and structured. There is also the elements of traditional medicines that are being incorporated. So given that role NHA had, of course, had to play a central role in doing the work itself, building the ecosystem. But as it becomes a robust ecosystem, I think there would be a role for somebody, be it, and I don't want to speculate if NHA should take on the role, but there would be a need for someone to have more regulatory functions, more oversight and statutory responsibilities than it has right now. So I think it's in the future, but not too far would be my guess.
Right. And you know,
I can just come in.
Sure.
I think given the Aadhaar example that you gave, right, UID is starting off as playing a certain role, and over time, as I think the scope and the mandate and the progress was made, the role kind of also evolved. Let's put that in contrast with UPI, what NPCI did versus what RBI does, right? So we have two examples and both successful examples. And I think in health, and these are also, I think, if not identity, but something like the financial sector is very regulated in our country compared to health, especially digital health. I think digital health is a fairly fragmented space at this point in time. I also want to acknowledge the role the other ministries may play in this. Something like a Ministry of Electronics and IT, right? The digital component of digital health may also fall under there. So I think there has to be perhaps a more interministerial coordination that may have to come about, or a special power that may have to be assigned to National Health Authority to eventually become a regulator. But I think having a regulator in digital health to ensure how do you create, manage, store, exchange digital data or digital devices, any of that, right? I think for that to be regulated. So perhaps, yes.
Yeah. And that question is still out in the open, because when we thought of the digital public infrastructure for India, I assume we had three important priorities, right? Identity, payments, and now healthcare. And for identity, we have a structure, like you said, the UIAI. And for payments, you already had a RBI, which was regulating it. So NPCI could just be a body which is overseeing the infrastructure. So I don't know, maybe that's something for policymakers to think about, you know, what kind of regulatory body is suitable for looking at healthcare. But that actually takes me to the next question, because, you know, why do we need regulation at all? Because there are risks, right? And these risks need to be managed. And when we talk of digitalization of health records of individuals, the first thing which strikes is, you know, the privacy risk involved. And this can have vast consequences over a period of time for the individual's life as well, because, you know, there might be certain medical procedures that they have undertaken that they don't want to be become a public record. There can be leaks or selective leaks about certain health conditions about people, which may affect their life prospects or reputation and so on. So they might be like, I can think of 20 other risks, but which is why I want to know what sort of thinking has gone into ABDM as far as risk management and, you know, risk mitigation is concerned. Can an individual be assured of security of their health records and data? Is consent and certain other privacy safeguards inbuilt into the system? And of course, not some nominal consent, but actual and real informed consent. So I want to know from you, you know, what has been the thought process like, and how would you reassure us?
This, I think, comes especially because this is health data and it's as personal as it can be. It becomes all the more critical to ensure that privacy security is taken into consideration. And at the time when ABDM was being designed, that was also something that was core to all the decision makers and policy makers, right? So at the very core of the architecture is privacy by design. You want to ensure privacy is given its importance and its structures in place, right? So ABDM has a place where you have something called the consent manager, and no transaction or sharing of information in the ecosystem is possible without the person's consent. And like you said, there is a whole description and there's a whole architecture to what a consent means. It's informed, it's time bound, it has a purpose, and you have the right to retract it. Now, at no point of time that there are other considerations around consent, but from an architecture and design point of view, that was something very, very important alongside, just to ensure that there are more layers to security. The architecture of ABDM is federated, which basically means wherever the data is being generated, it's stored there, right? So it's at the source of generation of the data. And in the ecosystem, accessing data is not as possible because you're ensuring that it is masked. You have to keep a consent acknowledgement that this data was taken or shared or processed with an individual's consent. So it would be, even if it's shared, the kind of sharing of information is possible, has to be declared, right? At the same time, NHA had come up with, this is way before DPDP came into play, but they had something called the Health Data Management Policy. And that policy had specifically laid out security features and provisions for an individual to access. Then the DPDP Act came into play. And so now the effort is to align. Obviously, it applies, it's personal data. So all of the provisions of the DPDP also apply to health data. So that is from a privacy point of view. But from a security point of view, for any integrator who's coming into the system, any solution provider who's coming into the system, there's a minimum criteria that is enforced of them to ensure that their solution is secure. And once each solution provider manages to get that validation and certification through an empaneled agency, that is when you are assured that there's minimum security standards being met. And when I say minimum, I'm not saying they're easy. They're actually pretty well defined in that sense. So, because technology is also improving. So you have certain components that keep getting added to it.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking out loud here. Like, for example, if I have to purchase a health insurance policy from some private player of my choice, can, say, the private player, let's call them HDFC, for example, right? Can they ask me to share all my health records, which has been shared in this particular, which has been stored in this particular ABHA ID with them, for them to determine the premium or cost of the insurance policy? Is that a possibility? Is that intended? Is that unintended? Is it a bug? Is it a feature? Can something like that happen?
No, it cannot. I think what Surbhi was referring to, very important point, right? Federated architecture. The data will only store, will be stored where it's generated. And the only other place where you perhaps can view it is if you, as a patient whose data or a user whose data it is, chooses to pull that and store in your own health locker or whichever PHR application you may choose to use. So no, that's not possible. Second, one of the things that we spoke of earlier in the three gateways that NHA has built as part of the larger stack, one of it is the Health Information Exchange Consent Manager, HICM. That gateway is specifically to enable interoperability of health data in the ecosystem. So that gateway can facilitate that exchange of information across two parties. These could be two different facilities. If the patient chooses to share data from facility X to facility Y, could be between a payer as well as a facility, but that can only happen with the consent of the user themselves. One of the things that HICM, one of the key components, right, as the name suggests, it leverages one of the existing DPGs called the consent artifact. And this is where a lot of existing DPGs have been used in multiple formats in the entire health stack, and consent artifact happens to be one, where whenever a consent is taken, it is stored with this HICM gateway. So there is record that somebody gave consent in all of these metrics that Surbhi spoke of earlier, at what time, and you know, the metadata of that consent itself is stored at the gateway level. So there is documentation of that consent. Second is, again, from a safety perspective, and which I think has been a great lever for driving adoption as well, is that the way ABDM has been designed is actually already in accordance with the DPDP. So whatever the features that have been articulated for, say, a data principal, a data fiduciary, so on and so forth, all of that is already in line with how one solution is expected to perform as per the ABDM guidelines. So we're actually telling integrators, saying if you want to actually become compliant with the DPDP, you should actually get your solution integrated with ABDM because the design already allows for that.
You know, just to push that example a little bit further, say, for example, the insurer says that you have three options. One, you share your data and I'm going to fix the premium based on that. Second, in case you don't share it, I'm going to draw an adverse inference and say that, okay, you have to pay a higher premium because you're refusing to share the data. Of course, it's your consent after all. And the third is an actual denial of service, right? Saying, okay, you're not sharing the data, you're not on this platform, so no, tada, bye-bye, you're not going to get insurance, right? So in this sort of situation, what are the safeguards that are available? And this is purely value neutral, right? I'm not saying, oh, insurer companies are bad, they're going to do this, they're going to hike up your premium. I'm just saying, of course, it's also a positive incentive for people to, you know, share the data and get a lesser premium or whatever, right? But given in this example, are there safeguards for any person against, say, denial of service or, you know, differentiation in price? Or do you think that is completely fine and that is something which is enabled by this architecture?
There are two aspects to it. I think the way premiums are currently decided are almost sometimes not accurate for what would help, right? They are very generalized in the way the premiums are being decided, and it depends on what you want to disclose. So sometimes I don't want to disclose my all health conditionalities. And within the architecture, there is a mechanism in which people can have multiple ABHA accounts, right? And you can store different data in different accounts, just how you do your UPI. So you might have one on Google Pay, you might have one on Paytm, and there are different transactions being done. Similarly, let's say there's very personal information that I do not want to share, which I think can impact my insurance premium. That is something that as a beneficiary, I can choose to not give consent, give access to it. But at the same time, I know that there are certain provisions in the insurance scheme that can actually benefit me, given I have some conditionalities, right? And I have a data to show that my conditionality is at whatever level, or this is the kind of coverage I need. So I think what the proposition for insurance actually is, that we assume and we are predicting that the packaging of your schemes under insurance coverage actually become better with more incentive. Now the pervasive nature of the system might still operate, right? But your intent is to provide the most holistic package that can happen. And there are provisions that if denied service, you cannot deny someone services on it, right? So there are provisions of grievance redressal and all of that an individual can go seek for a denial of insurance. So yeah. I think that provision is in place.
Yeah, and actually, thanks for the clarification, but because it really is important that goes out there as well. You know, moving on, I think I want to go back to what Riya earlier spoke about, you know, having certain roadblocks in sort of like taking this infrastructure fully off the ground. And one of the things that she mentioned was uptake by different players in the private ecosystem, and they're slow to move for whatever reason they may be. But if you were to sort of pitch it to them, you know, what do you think are the incentives here for different private players to come and build on top of the infrastructure, or build different health solutions for people in the country, innovate, create a startup ecosystem maybe, and sort of like also contribute to the overall growth of the health sector? So if you had to list some of them, what would be the opportunities for private players in this ecosystem?
I think the idea, before I actually get to the specifics, the idea with this entire, the long-term game here, right, is also to create a bigger and a more thriving market in the health ecosystem. Right now, there are very few players in the health tech space. And even the ones who exist, very few of them have a turnover that, you know, maybe is 5 crore plus, actually. And because we engage with a lot of them, and there's not as much funding that goes in this space. So getting that cost of integration and validating and justifying that is a very important question that you're asking. And it's a very big ask of them, I think, at this point in time. To them, I say, right, is there are multiple use cases that come out of these foundational blocks that they can leverage. I like going back to the example, and I think the Zerodha founder said this very recently, right? If Aadhaar hadn't come, I don't know how my business would have scaled as much as it did in the last 6 to 7 odd years, because they made eKYC happen so quickly and got rid of the paperwork. And with these other identities, I think it's a very similar case. So if you have if you have something like an HPR, which is an identification number for a doctor, can you actually build use cases on top of that? A digital solution company today perhaps has to go through their own verification process of the doctor they onboard each time. But tomorrow, if somebody has an HPR ID and that is validated by the council and the government, maybe I can onboard it with a lot more ease. That brings down my cost and my time. That's one of the multiple use cases that I know the market will design for in the future. With other registries as well, right? Facility registry or even ABHA number. An ABHA number, for example, we're seeing, and this is live, right? We're seeing a lot of public hospitals reduce a lot of waiting time for patients right now for queue management. And we're soon going to enable payments to be a lot easier for these public hospitals. So leveraging these registries, a lot of these improvements can happen in the patient journey, in the doctor journey, in the data entry operator journey. So essentially, in the end, all contributing to better UI, UX, better use cases for all the stakeholders that are important for them. That's one. Second is when I talk about the different functionalities that ABDM is enabling from an interoperability standpoint, right? We've not gotten deeper into UHI because we're keen to chat further on it another time. But something like that, where essentially you're going to get a lot more users onto your platform if you're able to offer more services in the sense of better discoverability to your users, better pricing for your users. Today, the only doctors that the users can see on your platform are the doctors that you have onboarded, right? Tomorrow, you're going to open up that market a lot more and you can actually transact and engage with any other platform that exists. So in that sense, that market expands in itself. Your customer acquisition cost also reduces in that sense, because then you'll be able to focus on one service and one service only, which is to provide a good, for example, a PHR application. You don't have to focus on the doctor side anymore, right? Because that heavy lifting somebody else is doing now. Same goes for even in an insurance side, right? The idea with this National Health Claims Exchange, again, it's not something we've gone deep into, but trying to standardize the claims processing, the idea of that is to bring down the cost of claims. And what that will also eventually do is standardize the process for facilities as well, which is to bring down their costs further. Currently, they have to fill different forms for different TPAs, different payers that they engage with. But if you've standardized that to one e-claims format, you're bringing down cost and resources for them as well. So taking a step back, I think there's a lot of activation that's going to happen at different touch points. And more users are going to start engaging with tech to avail services, to discover services, to manage their health data better, and of course for payments, etc. as well, right? And this is while we're not even getting into the future of emerging tech to come and build for them to build on top of, right? With AI, blockchain, what can they build on top of already? So I think in that sense, a lot more will unpack in the coming few years for them.
Right. You know, one of the things that we were having a conversation on All Things Policy in one of the previous episodes, after Supreme Court has decided that, you know, there has to be price caps for all the hospital healthcare services in the country and has the union government to look into it, is, you know, one of the reasons why there's a lot of apprehension about overcharging in hospitals is because there is no market of second opinions in the country, right? It's very hard to obtain a second opinion because there is so much difficulty in getting your medical reports running around from one place to another. And once somebody is admitted to an hospital, it's also not that easily switchable, right? It's very hard. And of course, it's both like mentally, physically, financially a difficult process. And I'm just wondering out loud, so please correct me. Do you think something like the architecture behind ABDM can also enable a market for second opinions to come up in the country, because sharing of health records has become much more easier, right? If there are specialized players who are willing to offer this, and that might in some way also lead to hospitals refraining from overcharging for the services if at all they're doing it.
Absolutely. That's very much a use case that can be solved for by ABDM. Let's look at the problem a little bit more closely. I think typically the top challenges that come up in terms for getting a second opinion is, one, that your existing health data, your existing health report actually sits in facility X where you got your first opinion. And what you want to do is you want to take that data and be able to transfer to a different facility and actually get that from a different doctor and get that opinion. So to enable this seamless exchange of health data between facilities is what ABDM enables from the health information exchange consent manager piece that I spoke of earlier. And what it also does is it enables that whatever data that was, of course, it can be transferred from facility X to facility Y with the patient's consent, but also that when it's generated at the facility X in the first place, it's linked back to the patient itself. So they're able to maintain and own their health data, and that health data is actually in their phones, their tablets. So whenever they do go, there's not too much paperwork, etc., that is involved. They can actually take their devices and share that data even before the consultation itself. So that's one part of it. The second challenge that comes about in Second opinion is also discovering a credible doctor with the right price point as well, which is where something like the UHI comes in, right? The increasing the discoverability of doctors, which doctor, meets the criteria that you're looking for, is what are their credentials? What are the price points? Where are they located? So on and so forth. So second opinions, both from a sharing of data of existing previous reports, existing health history, etc., is possible, as well as finding the right person to give you that second opinion is also possible. I also actually want to expand this answer and even talk about things like what does it mean from a doctor's perspective if you are doing actually a follow-up with the same patient? So what about a second visit to the same doctor itself, right? And that's where we're encouraging use cases such as teleconsultation through a UHI. Because typically today what happens is if the doctor's prescribed a test, the patient typically would share that over a WhatsApp or as an informal chat and may actually not come back for that second visit that the doctor may have asked for. So the doctor is not able to monetize that or charge the right price for that second visit. And that's why we're encouraging to leverage something as teleconsultation through UHI. So you're able to price it accordingly. You're able to get the health, the report back or the health data that you want from the patient through the ABDM framework itself. And it all kind of feeds back into the patient's longitudinal health journey. So yes, I think all in all, these are exactly the use cases that ABDM intends to fulfill.
Right. Okay, I think this is a good note to end our conversation today because we are going to be taking up UHI in a subsequent episode, which will be out in the coming days. So thank you so much, Surbhi, Ria, for joining me on this chat today and taking us through this whole digitalization of healthcare that is going on in the country behind the Ayushman Bharat digital mission. So thanks once again, and I'll leave it to you for any concluding thoughts or we can head home.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a pleasure. And we're hoping more and more folks are interested about the digital health journey that India is undertaking. And the next few years are going to be exciting ones to watch out for.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sri. Thank you for having us. And the discussion was also a reflection for us in terms of how far the journey has been and where we are today. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And catch you again in the next episode.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst. Or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word, tell your friends, and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.